Hi, I'm Russell Harrison, the CEO here at Western Health. Welcome to the COVID catch-ups. These are sessions where I get to catch up with small groups of staff from across Western Health in a slightly different way to normal. We ask some questions, we have some fun, answer some questions, and hopefully just have a good conversation. So welcome everyone, doing another COVID catch-up today, and today we're doing it with some of our junior medical officers from across Footscray and Sunshine. We'll introduce them in a second, but just to start from me, a huge thank you to the great work that the junior medical staff have been doing throughout their time at Western Health, but I guess especially over the last few months with COVID and all the changes that they probably had to endure and react to, and we'll get to some of that in that kind of sense in a wee while. First, I'd like to start by introducing the team. So we've got Sonia.
Hello, everyone. My name's Sonia Srinivasan. I'm a current medical resident and the RMO Society co-president for this year.
Thanks, Sonia. Jennifer?
I'm Jennifer Henning. I'm a HMO2 general stream, and I'm also the RMO Society co-president this year.
And Malcolm?
Hi, my name's Malcolm Moss. I'm one of the medical residents, and I'm the education officer for the Junior Doctors Society.
And thanks for coming in, guys. I know it's a day off, so I really appreciate the fact that you're giving up some of your time for this. So without further ado, we'll kick off. We just have a chat and we'll see where it goes. And as I say, I'll ask you a few questions. And if you're feeling brave, then shoot back. One of the things, and we'll start with you, Jennifer, first. We'll jump a little bit out of line. How are you adapting to the challenges of COVID in, you know, junior doctor training and your work at Western Health? And I guess now, particularly as we've moved into a sort of second wave and some of the restrictions coming back, how are you handling that with your colleagues?
So it's definitely been an interesting time over the last few months. I started out in intensive care just as COVID was really taking off.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of anxiety about exactly what this disease was and how we should treat it. We did get a few cases as well, but really I think the most challenging thing was just dealing with that anxiety, both my own anxiety and also the anxiety of my colleagues, from my medical colleagues, my nursing colleagues. Everyone was just really, really worried, thinking, things are actually quiet at the moment. You know, is this the calm before the storm?
Yeah.
Is the wave coming? And it never really did, which is a really, really good outcome. But it still feels like we're in a bit of limbo where we're still getting some cases, maybe not so many. And then all of a sudden, it looks like we are actually getting into second wave territory. So I've seen a change in the attitudes of people throughout this pandemic. I think that people are a lot more relaxed now that we know more information about COVID, and people are treating it more as a respiratory infection that obviously we don't want to catch, but we do trust our PPE, and we don't feel quite as worried as we did at the start that we're going to get scenes like Italy or like the US.
Yeah.
But certainly in terms of career progression, I think a lot of the junior doctors feel like our careers are a bit on hold at the moment because our exams have been cancelled, our conferences have been cancelled.
Yeah.
So that's also a challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine. Probably pretty stressful to boot as well in terms of that career trajectory and the normality of what should be happening that probably isn't.
Yeah.
Malcolm, education rep, probably a good lead-in for you to pick up some of that around those changes that junior doctors are facing in that education piece. How's that working out at the moment for you and your colleagues?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a mixed time from the education point of view. Certainly when social distancing started, we had to sort of put things on hold while I think we worked out what we could do. But Zoom has really been a boon for junior doctor education and nursing education as well. It's allowed us to deliver education to quite a broader sort of group of people. So people that maybe are sitting at home or on different campuses as well, being able to engage with our education. And that's been really good. I think it's led to better participation.
Okay. That's interesting. In a sort of socially distant sort of bit, you get more participation.
Yeah.
Is that because Zoom's an easy platform for people to dial into and use, and it's, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's super easy to use. Yeah.
Yeah. And Malcolm and I were chatting a bit earlier about the fact that Western Health had used Zoom for a long time before the process, largely because of our cross-campus nature, try and stop people having to travel. So we're probably a bit better set up when the pandemic hit to roll it out. But good to know it works, and it's helping attendance.
Yeah, it works really well. Yeah.
And Sonia, how about yourself? You've got a kind of role as the RMO Society co-president, therefore I guess a lot of support and that to colleagues. So how's that been working for you, and how have you managed to sort of do that and your role as well?
Yeah, I think something that we've thought has also been a bit of a positive has been the kind of transparency and communication and access to senior staff discussions over planning. So as Jin was saying, when things were very, very uncertain, we were fielding a lot of concerns and queries from our junior colleagues. We had a rolling Google Doc, we had a Facebook COVID support group, and we were seeing what the main concerns were, whether one week they were scrubs, another week they were social distancing in our residence quarters and keeping on top of those. But we had these JMO forums where students were able, hundreds of staff actually, joined these Zoom forums and asked questions, and our senior medical staff were very available to answer everything. So I think similar to the Zoom, how it's increased connectivity in a strange way, there's also been a bit more communication, and interdepartmental education has also been a big thing that Zoom's allowed. So, you know, ICU running specific tutes for cardiology is now all available through Zoom. So communication, transparency, that's been something that's really helped.
Yeah, okay. That's good to know that the senior staff have also been available to help take some of that anxiety out, I guess, that Jennifer was mentioning earlier on.
Yeah.
And how's it gone generally supporting each other? Because I know I would say this because I'm wildly biased, but I think Western Health is an interesting place and a very different place about culture and how people support each other and the camaraderie that exists across all groups of staff. And I get the sense from what you were saying about the junior doctors having the Facebook groups and all those, that there's been a lot of support given amongst yourselves. But has the organisation support been useful, helpful, lacking?
I think we've had lots and lots of emails, and then we've had WhatsApp updates about all the changes. There have been lots of, I think the microsite has helped. So all the videos around how the criteria is changing and how to exactly take the swab. I think that's been really helpful to have a central port of information, particularly as we've all been struggling. A big area of support is trying to keep up with the information that changes,
yeah,
and how the criteria changes. And, you know, how we've employed several de-isolation COVID HMOs.
Yeah.
So I think everyone's been getting involved in a different way, and having all that information available, that's been a challenge that we've been supporting each other through.
Particularly at the start of the whole pandemic, there was these guidelines were changing, it felt like every day. And so having a central
That's probably
place,
true.
it was true, but definitely. Having a central place where you could say, well, you know, for the procedure I'm about to do, what PPE do I require? You can go to a certain place and it resolves any disputes that people have. And that was a crucial tool.
Yeah.
We needed good, clear communication from the health service, and we really got it at the time we needed it.
Well, that's good to know. So good feedback for the guys that worked long hours into the night to produce those. So I'm sure they'll appreciate that one. Jennifer, we've seen restrictions kind of ease and life was returning back to semi-normal. And you mentioned, you know, at the beginning, the anxiety for the first wave. Now we're back into the second wave. How's the reaction of family being around, you know, you coming to work and potentially ICU, and have you handled some of those anxieties around, you know, the new second wave and what's happening?
So I've been pretty strict with my family, and I basically put them in isolation at the start. So I did take on a bit of extra time, you know, delivering groceries and things like that to my parents, because I really didn't want them to be exposed. And, you know, I haven't hugged them. I haven't been in close contact with them for a really long time now, which is, you know, I guess it's just what it is at the moment. But I don't know, I guess I haven't really seen too much fear from my friends or anything like that. When I have seen them, I'm still the one that's like, no, we can't get too close.
Yeah.
They're a bit more relaxed about it, I have to say.
Uh-huh.
But I think people are taking this, you know, this threat of a second wave seriously.
Yes.
And, you know, they are listening and they are trying to maintain their social distancing, maintain the habits that they picked up before, even though things were relaxing.
And Malcolm, how about you? You're saying, you know, from Perth originally, so how has the family reacted to you, A, being in Victoria, you know, centre of the second wave? Are they concerned, or are they kind of understanding of what you do and how you do it?
Yeah, I think that they are concerned. I've had a couple of family members message me and say, hey, you know, how close are you to some of these hotspots? But also we, as healthcare workers, we're in a place that necessarily exposes us. So it's good that we've had a lot of training about how to minimize risk.
Yeah.
And they know that, you know, we know how to minimize risk. But it does put us into a certain category of people that does expose us somewhat. So they are pretty concerned about that.
Okay.
I wonder as well, Jen, you mentioned about sort of people taking it more, not casually, but they're not worried so much about it. I don't know, like, do you feel like other junior doctors maybe aren't taking the PPE requirements as seriously?
Yeah, I think there's been variable take-up of that from the start, to be honest, because even when things were really taking off, there wasn't a lot of social distancing in the workspace. So I thought it was really, really good when we actually brought in the PPE rules about wearing a mask at all times, wearing a face shield at all times in the high-risk areas, because you just never know. And we've been really lucky that we haven't had a localised outbreak in the hospital like some of the other hospitals in Melbourne have.
Yes.
I think that our PPE may have had something to do with that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and Sonia, how about you? You have folks overseas in New Zealand and things. How's that gone?
Well, I've got two sets of family. Half of them are in the States.
Oh, and wow.
The other are in Auckland. So very differing views on how we're going over here. My parents are in Auckland, and they went very strict lockdown very early with great results. They were horrified that I was still getting takeaways when they were suffering with their long, ever-growing hair and just cooking at home. My family's not medical either, so I think that's been another layer of concern and confusion. Something that's been interesting probably for a lot of us is playing that role in our friends and family of de-jargonizing, explaining that things are changing and will continue to change, and it's frustrating, but it's also frustrating for everyone. So it's been a mixture of reassurance and then re-explanation. My American family, they're continuing to wear their masks and be as safe as possible, but very different experience over there.
And I've had to explain to a few people that 5G doesn't cause COVID.
Thank you for your service.
I'm glad I could provide that service.
Yeah, well, that seems to be a good rumour out there at the moment, so it's handy to know. But I guess going back to Malcolm's point, anyone can answer it, I guess, it's that bit around not the casualness in the workforce, but that sense of PPE, face shields, as you say, for juniors, particularly junior doctors, that's the cramped office spaces. And I know from going around doing the crazy socks for docs bit, you know, went into one office and there's about 15 junior doctors crammed in a space that you probably should have got two people in, even without social distancing. So how are junior doctors coping with that in terms of, you know, do they want to wear the face shields? Do they not need them? Do they think it's a bit, you know, limiting on clinical practice, or, you know?
They definitely took some getting used to, particularly when we had the first wave of the face shields, the kind of single-use ones that we had to keep using for a little while. And certainly I think people were getting a bit frustrated, people were getting headaches. And you know, I think, like, if you're on a 12-hour night shift and you have to wear this shield and this mask and you can't really hear each other, that was certainly frustrating to begin with. But I've gotten used to them. I think most people have just kind of acclimatized to it now.
The new ones are so comfortable.
They are.
The high-tech ones. Mm.
The one with that foam at the front, that is foam, amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, the foam's great, but it gets a bit wearing after a long shift, I'm sure. But I noticed, because one of your colleagues, I think it was one of the nursing team, actually sent me a sort of scrub hat to put on so I can put my facial shield at the top. And actually that defeats all headaches.
Yeah, fair enough.
I know the ED guys have been, when they came up, they're all, they have a competition to see who has the most jazziest headwear, because they're in it permanently, aren't they? So I suppose for them, they're probably used to it by now.
I think from the perspective of using PPE to see patients, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is the registrar just gets sort of sent into the room.
The sacrificial
lamb.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, we sort of stand as juniors, we stand outside and type away and make polite conversation with the consultant, and the registrar gets sent in full PPE. So, you know.
Yeah, that's the sort of informal changes that I think have happened with our training as well. So education changes, examinations not happening as much. But one of my consultants commented that the fact that we have the one sacrificial registrar to do all the history and exam, it's put us a little bit into a typist role. And previously where we would have been examining or taking a history for our team to give us feedback on, we do that a lot less now. And it's something, I think that patient contact is something that we probably all miss, although it's a necessity.
Yeah. And has that been deliberate in terms of, you know, the registrar takes the history because you almost get one chance to get it right, and therefore the PPE and stuff is, let's just go and do it and come out.
And it minimises PPE usage as well.
Yeah. And minimises the number of people entering a room. The registrar is probably the most useful and most important person who's going to go in and out if necessary.
Yeah.
And there was the case at Sunshine where there was the patient that wasn't swabbed for COVID, and it took out half of a team.
Yeah.
So we try and minimise that happening.
I mean, they weren't swabbed because they didn't have any symptoms, sadly. Emergency case that came in and, I mean, the nursing staff and the medical staff late in the evening when the symptoms first came on were brilliant at sort of going, right, whoop, let's follow the process and the rules. And but sadly, by then he'd been through a fair portion of the hospital and the rest is history, as they say.
I think we can't forget as well the medical students. They really need to lay hands on patients, talk to them, spend a lot of time, and they do spend a lot of time with them just by a dint of being students. But that's really stopped for them.
Yeah.
And you sort of can't justify why would you spend a whole pile of time with a patient and then potentially expose yourself and your family, your friends, etc.
It's pretty tough on the education side about how COVID is impacting on everybody's educational opportunities, I guess. As you say, from not getting patient contact and histories to students not going in. And, I mean, there was a long time where they suspended all the student training. Absolutely. So
They've just come back this week, actually.
Yeah.
For their first day of clinical placement halfway through the year.
It's pretty challenging.
The clinical assistant role was a really interesting sort of pilot experiment. I thought lots of them were thrilled to be able to be helpful, and I think any one of us would have jumped at the opportunity to be helpful as a student. But it was interesting having their primary role not be learning and not be teaching, and it took all, I think especially juniors, interns and residents, took the main role in structuring what their function was on the team. So that was really interesting working with them with that.
And through these COVID catch-ups, a lot of staff have been saying, you know, we've been in unexpected places. So instead of going on our rotation to ICU or ED, we've been put to X or Y. And, they reflect on the fact that at first that was quite confronting and it wasn't quite part of the plan or it's not their job. But they actually found it hugely rewarding because they learn a whole lot of new stuff and different people that they probably would never have come across. Is that similar for you guys or is it a bit different?
Well, I think Jen and I started in ICU. We sort of saw these people rotate through our departments. But I think there was that general sense, you know, that you heard the horror stories about orthopedic surgeons, no offense to them, managing ventilated patients in Italy. You know, that was horrifying. That was the general sense that I got from people outside of ICU is, are we going to start having ICU level patients?
Yeah.
There was definitely a lot of fear about that. But I think certainly when I was in ICU, and I assume Malcolm had the same experience, they did a really, really good job at bringing people from other units in. So the cardiologist would come and do ward rounds with us in the morning. The anaesthetist would come and do ward rounds because they were basically on standby for if the surge did come and if we needed to employ more people to be managing ventilated patients. So at the start, I think a lot of junior doctors were really worried that they would be the ones that would have to manage this. And towards the end, they realised, no, actually, that's not the role that they're going to be put into.
Was that part of some of that anxiety at the early stage for juniors? Because they suddenly thought, wow, I'm a very junior doctor going to be let loose to manage, you know, X number of really sick ventilated patients.
Definitely. I think so. And the ICU team did a really, really good job with doing a series of educational tutes for people via Zoom, which I think definitely helped the ward staff. But it also put people's minds at ease that they wouldn't be left alone to manage this, and it wasn't going to be like Italy where it sounded like everyone was just working as much as they possibly
could. We have fingers crossed it won't be anything like Italy, but I think at the point that the health services were just absolutely swamped, that it's all hands to deck. And
I think that's maybe part of why people are not so worried about the second wave, because we've actually had such a long time now to prepare. Even if it got pretty bad, I think the hospital would, and the hospital service system in general would work quite well.
And I think our hospital will be a lot better for a lot of the upskilling that's happened. So I was in cardiology while my colleagues were in ICU, and a lot of the cardiology nurses are now have been upskilled to function similarly to ICU liaison nurses. They're going to met calls, going to code blues. It's great to work on a unit where all the nurses are functioning as ICU liaison nurses. So that's been really good.
So that's where all the staff have been reflecting, saying, oh, this has been really great. We've got new skills or we've seen new things and got different experiences. So, interesting. I guess the sense for me is that, you know, as juniors and in leadership roles as the co-presidents, how does that sit in amongst a busy sort of clinical role? You know, you've got people like Malcolm to help support, take parts of the portfolio on, and there'll be other colleagues, I'm sure, that are not here. But has that felt in the three of you with leadership roles to do across what has been, a, you know, as you said earlier, and we all reflect on a hugely dynamic and very changing circumstance that things are moving very quickly in mid-March, day-to-day changes. It sort of calmed down a little bit. Now we're back on the sort of day-to-day change again. How has that felt as your colleagues look to you guys for leadership? Has it been challenging, or have you just sort of took it on and said, yep, that's us, we're fine, we can get on with it?
It's definitely made me realise, have a lot more general empathy and camaraderie with leadership positions, definitely. the role that you have to take in reassuring people, being there for people in times of uncertainty, when no one knows what's happening, is very challenging, and deciding where to run with someone's fear and where to try and manage it where it is. Our interns were very stressed about the thought of not rotating off of their rotations, and that was a really tricky middle ground for us. We were sort of liaising with the AMA, our senior colleagues here at the hospital, and the interns, and managing that in a realistic way was a challenge.
It was. You know, we did have originally a Department of Health statement, I guess, saying that we weren't going to be able to proceed with our rotations. And in the end, I think the cases didn't take off as much as was thought, and we were allowed to proceed. And it's really, really great that we still were able to do that. And for the interns in particular, where they have core rotations that they need to get an internship, the thought of some of them missing out on, say, a surgical term was pretty bad. So the fact that they were able to proceed was a really, really good reflection on the institution, because not every hospital did actually go ahead with that.
And
it's advocacy, I think, from the interns themselves. There's a lot of junior level driven advocacy, which was actually really admirable to see, I think.
And you know, as you said, it reflected on it, it's also a leadership function of how the collegiately the junior doctors and the organization worked together to try and make things happen in a sort of, you know, risk-managed way rather than just a free-for-all and blow it all up. I guess the final question for me is, have you managed to keep your own energy levels up? You know, as you say, leadership positions are different and challenging at times and take a fair bit of energy. You've got the day job on top of that, plus the study and everything else going on. How have you managed to keep your energy levels consistently high and, you know, where they need to be?
I would be the first to say I was pretty tired during the peak of everything, because at that point in time we were having meetings every week with the deputy CMO. We were also having meetings every week with our own committee. We were fielding all of the questions, managing the Google form, managing the Facebook page.
But yet you kept coming back day after day, which is hugely appreciated. So,
but, you know, I guess the challenge as well was that given that everything was in lockdown, I think a lot of people couldn't do the things that they would normally do to unwind. So you can't go to the gym, you can't go travelling, you can't do any of that stuff. And I think I just got very tired at the end of it all. I took a little bit of a break, but, you know, at least I still have my partner at home. I had someone that I could talk to and support me, and I've done a lot of yoga in the last few months.
Fair enough. Malcolm,
Sonny? Really teamwork, and I actually think having different positions keeps the energy going. I think being able to switch from a ward round and a discharge summary to a meeting, to a discussion with a team, really helps with momentum and focusing, shift focusing, which is really useful. Exercise, we've done a lot of exercise at home. We've had some high-intensity workouts in the garage, so that's really helped. And teamwork as well. I think we, our entire Junior Doctor Society team have really focused on different things. So we've had education. We've also had social. We've had a Zoom pub quiz event, which was very well attended. One of our social committee members is running an exercise competition through an app called Strava. So multiple avenues in lots of ways.
Yeah, there's some great pictures online of people that have done Strava drawings. I don't know, if you Google Strava drawings and there's some great pictures. Star Wars features heavily.
Excellent. So the way I sort of, I think it's important to realize that the fatigue that we might have been exposed to is nothing to what healthcare workers in other countries have been exposed to. So I think that's really important to realize. But I think from my point of view, I haven't been in the co-president sort of position, so I don't think I've had some of that fatigue, the same as you guys. But I got sick of the conversation my cat was providing at home. So I had to get out of the house. I bought myself a new bike and I started doing laps of the Maribyrnong River. So that's probably how I dealt with it. But I think in general, I think junior doctors need to have good work-life balance techniques. And I think our workload didn't actually change that much. Yeah. I think we had a lot of mental fatigue. Certainly at the peak, you know, we were getting news story after news story of how many people have died, like these healthcare workers with pressure injuries from their masks that they were wearing. And to be honest, I had to take some time out of reading the news.
Yeah. A lot of people have said that the news coverage actually was more wearing than the reality. Yeah.
Absolutely. That was really tiring to me. And it really fed a lot of fear at the workplace. And I just had to take some time out. Remember, my job hasn't actually changed that much.
Yeah.
And just get on and continue doing what I love, which is like procedures and stuff like that.
And I guess, you know, from some of our communities, certainly around the hospitals, they've been doing it really tough because they've lost jobs and are stuck in their house. And I suppose it's a bit of an escape to come to work and do something a bit different.
We actually have been really lucky as health. I felt so guilty when people said about healthcare workers being heroes and stuff. Actually, the heroes are the people that have 2-3 kids at home and both of the parents have lost their jobs.
Yeah.
I felt so bad.
Do the curriculum at home.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the worst part. Deal with their kids all day.
But they've got to be teachers as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And actually coming to work was, as you say, was fantastic.
Very good
getting to see all of these people.
Okay.
It's one of the interesting things I've noticed is that amongst my friends and amongst the medical students that I've had on this week, they get really, really tired after social contact at a hospital because they're just not used to it anymore.
That's interesting.
Isolating at home, they've barely seen anyone, and then they come here and, you know, you meet so many new people in a day, you talk to so many people, there's so much going on. So it's, I think there might be a bit of a lifestyle change for a lot of people going forward. People might have slowed down a bit as a consequence of this pandemic, which is probably a good thing.
And in any outward or people-facing job, you're on all day, so you're energy-wise, and you know you're always on, and there isn't really a break with how you interact with people. And if there is, it can be a bit deflating. So I can see how that transition to working at home, we've had to continually keep up our energy and our people skills, but some people might find that a bit of a
always on
coming back.
Okay, guys, we've been chatting for a wee while. I've kind of been doing all the questioning. I'm happy to kind of, you know, feel any if you've got any or not. So
I just wanted to say thank you very much for the leadership that Western Health has given to us. It's made our jobs a lot easier, having clear messages and a lot of good planning. I know it's taken a lot of work. So
yeah, a lot of great people behind the scenes, but I think that's part of the benefit at Western. We've got a lot of great people across the board, so it's made life easier for us, hopefully, and well prepared.
I actually would be interested in knowing, Russell, how this has affected you in your role as CEO.
Oh, there's a deep and meaningful answer to that and a really flippant one. I guess in a sense, it's a bit that Sonia was saying earlier on around leadership roles can be tough because there's a lot of, well, especially when there's a lot of anxiety, you've got to try and balance that. But the bit for me that was interesting is my job got slightly easier really quickly because we went from having lots of projects on, you know, the new hospital, potential amalgamations, community hospitals, EMRs, and all those other bits to literally COVID.
Yeah.
We had accreditation as the wind-up as it was blowing up as well. So life got a bit quieter, which gave me more time to focus on working with the team and setting things up. But we made a call back in January that we pulled a small group of planners offline to do nothing but COVID.
That had good foresight.
Well, sadly, I'd seen it before in other jurisdictions and been involved in that. So I was concerned that we need to get into a good place, and we had some good people to do that we pulled offline. So I think it's about how you continue to motivate the team and try and, you know, give that calm leadership bit and not react to all the chaos that's going on and try and keep the consistent messaging. And, you know, for me, it's about answering things truthfully. And if you don't know, you kind of, there's no harm in saying, I really don't know. This is the best we've got. But I think the fact that it's a bit of a unique experience as well to focus on just one thing. My world's got more complicated now as the restrictions lifted, everything came back on all at once. But it's, you know, I love being the CEO and I'm really proud to be the CEO. So it's a great place to be. And it's probably a unique health service because we're doing things that nobody else is doing. And we're doing them all at the same time, which is pretty wearing but great fun. So, yeah, no, thank you.
How do you keep up your work-life balance, especially in COVID, as a CEO?
I think much as you said, it's about how do you escape and turn off, which of late has been pretty tricky with all the late-night phone calls and things with the department. But it's about quarantining some time to do some different stuff. So I'm moving house. I've been packing boxes for the last little while, and that's all great fun. So I think it's just having something as a distraction, whether it's riding a bike, walking a dog, you know, punching something in the garage if you've got a punch bag, or yoga, something to take your mind out of that space of hecticness and work mode, and just sort of chill out. And, you know, I like to sleep. I sleep like the innocent baby that I am, and just go to sleep and sleep for several hours. But whatever works for people, I think, is the way to do it. And, you know, it's great to do different stuff just to stimulate the brain differently. Mm. So
learning when to not be accessible in a leadership position is something that Jen and I have been balancing this year.
Definitely. Mm. Yeah. And honestly, I think it's an important skill for any doctor because, you know, particularly as you progress in seniority, you are a leader. And
yeah,
there's definitely some good lessons there for all of us.
I think everybody, because Western Health's got a fairly flat structure in comparison to many, every role that we have is a leadership role because it's facing patients. And our patients look to whoever's in front of them to go, you know, I'm not here because I want to be, I'm here because I have to be. Tell me what I need to know, please, in a way that I can understand it because I'm hanging on every word. And that's a fairly big responsibility for everyone to take on. Mm. But I think people do, but it is everyone is in that leadership role of one sort or another. So it's great for that, but it's also kind of challenging, overlaying anxiety and other things that we all have in our lives. So anyway, all right. Well, thanks all. As I say, as I start at the beginning, a huge thank you for the work that you've done in your leadership roles in the JMO Society, across the organisation, but also in terms of turning up for work day in, day out, and even on your days off to do this, it is really appreciated. You know, I always kind of say we're a tier one organisation in far as the government, so we have to be here and we're always on. Even in COVID, we've still got patients that come in, so it's great that you and all of your colleagues have been able to help treat, support our community and return them back to the home environment. So a huge thank you, great work, and stay safe. Thanks for listening to the COVID Catch-Ups, and please feel free to share any of these episodes with any of your colleagues who you think might be interested.